Let's get started on another week of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word by turning to 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse number 20. Now, I told you last session that we very likely are jumping through several years' worth of events in a matter of verses here, because David was likely right around 13 or so when he defeated Goliath, and Saul moved him into military training and intended to put him into military leadership well before the typical age that he would join the military, which would be right around 20. Jonathan, the prince, has taken a special interest in David because of the love of God that both of them have, and the devotion to God and the faithfulness to God that they both share. And so Prince Jonathan, I think, is probably treating David as his younger brother and helping him get adjusted to the military life, even though he's still a teenager. Well, probably somewhere right around 17 or 18 or so, that would be the time that David would be of marriageable age. So Saul decided it was time to give his daughter Merib, Princess Merib, to David, as was promised for the victor against the Goliath giant. David turns him down. He feels humble. He feels that he's not worthy to be married to the princess. And so Saul loses out on that opportunity to push David even harder against the Philistines, to be a hero, because Saul is hoping that David will get killed if he stays always in the hottest frontline battles, which is what Saul is requiring of him as his future son-in-law. More than likely, a few months pass by, and that's when Saul finds out that his younger daughter, Michal, actually loves David. Verse 20, now Saul's daughter Michal loved David. They told Saul, and the thing pleased him. Saul thought, let me give her to him, that she may be a snare for him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. So he sees this as his second opportunity to convince David to become the son-in-law of the king, and therefore need to prove himself even more in battle and take the risks that will eventually end in his death. Therefore, the scripture says, Saul said to David a second time, you shall now be my son-in-law. And Saul commanded his servants, speak to David in private, and say, behold, the king has delight in you, and all his servants love you. Now therefore, be the king's son-in-law. So this time Saul engages in a much wider, much more intricate sales job to get David to marry his daughter Michal, who is probably closer to David's age than Merib was. And the bonus is, Michal wants to marry David, loves him very much, sees him as a heroic figure. So with all those sales points, David does seem to be a little bit tempted to follow through with this. But he's still got the problem that he doesn't feel he can meet the dowry demands for a princess. Because in Israel, as in many of the ancient Middle Eastern cultures, the family of the husband-to-be, or the husband-to-be himself, would offer a specific amount of money to provide for the bride-to-be in the customary way that she's lived, should she be abandoned by the husband or be widowed by the death of the husband. And so the more highly placed the woman in society, the bigger that price was, the larger amount of money needed to be put on account ahead of time to care for her. So David doesn't feel that he can meet that sort of princess dowry demand. Verse 23, Saul's servant spoke to these words in the ears of David. David said, "Does it seem to you a little thing to become the king's son-in-law, since I'm a poor man and have no reputation?" Now, the reputation he does have is as the hero of the Valley of Elah fight, the defeater of Goliath the giant. But he's thinking reputation as in, I'm a kid, I'm still young, I'm not even 20 years of age by now, and I've hardly done anything other than just be a fighter for the army. And I have nothing. I have very little money. So verse 24, the servants of Saul told him, that is, they brought this information back to the king. Thus and so did David speak. Then Saul said, "Thus you shall say to David, the king desires no bride price except 100 foreskins of the Philistines, that he may be avenged of the king's enemies." So Saul now sees that the sticking point is the dowry. David doesn't feel he can give a princess dowry. So Saul says, "I don't want a princess dowry. I want more dead Philistines." So he puts a time limit on the gathering of death trophies for David. Now, David's been fighting Philistines, and he's probably been taking death trophies. That was very common practice, because this is how you showed how many of the enemy you killed, and so that would indicate how much of the booty that you were supposed to receive, the war confiscations. Typically, in the old world, it was a head or a hand that was taken. In this case, Saul says, "All I want are the foreskins of 100 dead Philistines." This is tied into the fact that Philistines did not practice circumcision. The Israelis did, and so this would be proof positive that he'd killed Philistines. Because honestly, this is a little PG-13, so I'm sorry. Hopefully you can get your kids busy somewhere else. The reality is it'd be just much easier for him to cut the whole sexual organ off and bring those back as proof positive that he'd killed these men. Now, I'm sorry that that grosses a lot of you out, and some of you feel that that's barbaric, but war is barbaric. War is not pretty. There's blood and death and proof of the defeat of the enemy. That's always been the case. Body counts always play into war. And so David is asked to produce, in a specific period of time, proof positive that he's killed 100 Philistines. Now, it's interesting, just as kind of a little bit of a side note here, Josephus, whom we reference an awful lot when we go through the histories of the Jews, he stays away from this. And you can tell this when you read his stories. Anytime circumcision is shown in a negative light, he tries to avoid that. So he, in his text, says that Saul asked for the heads of 600 Philistines. So he bumps the number up and makes it heads, in which was common, instead of foreskins. But the inspired text makes it very clear. Saul wants Philistine proof. And he wants it in a very specific period of time. So the time limit was intended to make David take greater risk. Because the greater risk a person takes in war, the higher the chance is they'll get killed by making mistakes. That's the plot here. Get David killed in battle. Verse 26. When his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to be the king's son-in-law. See, he actually likes the idea of marrying Michal. More than likely, he and she get along. More than likely, they're of very close age. And so the idea of marrying into the family is good to him. So, before the time had expired, so that's where we find out there's a time limit involved, David arose and went along with his men and killed 200 of the Philistines. And David brought back their foreskins, which were given in full number to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. And no doubt, King Saul was horribly disappointed to see David back in his palace, and probably quite dumbfounded by the fact that David gave him twice the required dowry in order to marry Michal. So Saul gave him his daughter Michal for a wife. So we have now David becoming the son-in-law of the king, the brother-in-law of Prince Jonathan, the husband of Princess Michal. And verse number 28, when Saul saw and knew that he who is was with David and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him, Saul was even more afraid of David. And so Saul was David's enemy continually. So Saul is even more frustrated now that the guy he wants dead and has wanted dead for several years now just seems to prosper greatly and keeps coming closer and closer to the throne. Verse number 30. Then the princes of the Philistines came out to battle, and as often as they came out, David had more success than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was highly esteemed. So that verse jumps over quite a few years, probably, that there's year after year this attempted invasion from the coast of the Philistines into Israeli territory. Saul sends his warriors out, David chief among them, always trying to get David into the hottest battles to try to get him killed, but David always comes back victorious. And that brings an awful lot of honor and esteem. And now David is in his 20s. Chapter number 19. Saul spoke to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. All right. At some point, Saul begins to share his concerns with other people, that David is a threat to the throne. Now that's going to fall on probably some hearing ears for those that don't like the fact that David is moving very rapidly up through the ranks. Some of the military members probably are jealous or envious of David, and they don't like the idea that he is becoming super, super popular. And so they probably would agree with King Saul that he is a threat to the throne. It's not unheard of that popular military figures will sometimes pull off coups against aging civilian leaders. And Saul is an aging civilian leader. By the time that David's in his 20s, Saul has got to be well into his 50s and approaching his 60s. And so more than likely, he doesn't go out and fight except on very specific occasions. Jonathan, though, is a different matter. And Saul would have used a different approach with him. And we can see this in a later conversation. But I assume it's already happening. And that is, look, Jonathan, you're the prince, or you're the prince, the crown prince. You're the guy that's supposed to come to the throne after I'm gone. I know you think David is your friend. You think him as a very close personal friend. But I'm telling you, he wants my throne, and he will kill me, he will kill you, he will kill everyone in order to get that throne. And so Saul tells Jonathan that he wants David dead. But there's a problem. Verse 1 continues. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. So Jonathan told David, Saul, my father, seeks to kill you. Therefore, be on your guard in the morning, stay in a secret place, and hide yourself. So he knows that there is a plot that is secret. It's in only the high advisors to King Saul to kill David, apparently the following day. So Jonathan tells David, you need to hide out, and verse 3, I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak to my father about you, and if I learn anything, I will tell you. So this is a situation that gets repeated again later. They go out into the country, away from everybody else, and David is going to be already in place hiding. And Jonathan will bring his father to that very private place out in the middle of nowhere and have a conversation with him that David can hear. And then they'll act on that information. Verse 4, Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, let not the king sin against his servant David, because he's not sinned against you, and because his deeds have brought good to you. Now, there's something here in the wording that indicates there are lies being spread about David inside the upper tier of Saul's regime. And that will be mentioned in some of David's psalms, that he knows that some people that had been his friends in the past or were pretending to be his friends in the present were in fact his adversaries. So Jonathan is trying to convince Saul, anything that you're hearing that is negative against David is not true. He's not plotting against you. He's done nothing but good for you. And then he reminds him of the first event, verse 5. He took his life in his hand, and he struck down the Philistine, and he who is worked a great salvation for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. So Jonathan reminds Saul, that day when he took that giant's head, you were yelling and praising God with everybody else. So why then will you sin against innocent blood by killing David without cause? And Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan, which means he was persuaded by what Jonathan said. And Saul swore, as he who is lives, he shall not be put to death. So Saul takes an oath that what he had been planning against David right now, his death, is now off the table. He won't have David caught up and executed. So verse 7, Jonathan called David, and Jonathan reported to him all these things. And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as before. So that was a close call, almost getting David killed, but not quite. And then some time goes by. Verse 8, and there was war again with the Philistines. And now we're in the 18th year of King Saul. I'm positive of that. Which means that David is 28 years of age, and there's only about 2 years left of Saul's kingdom. So we've got a fight going on with the Philistines. David went out and fought with the Philistines and struck them with a great blow so that they fled before him. So as usual, Saul sends his army out against the Philistines. David is at the forefront. He probably even tries to get David in the hottest part of the battle to get him killed, but it doesn't happen. Instead, God blesses David. David has a great victory, and he comes back to the palace at Gibeah. Verse 9. Then a harmful spirit from He Who Is came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand. So this is a repeat of what had happened years earlier. David's had a great victory. Saul is upset about the fact that David's still alive, that God seems to be blessing him. Saul is concerned that David is the guy that's going to replace him on the throne, and he doesn't want that to happen. And the spirit, the demonic spirit, is pushing him and urging him. The best solution to your problem is for a dead David. And if the Philistines can't get him killed, well, he's right there in the room with you. Just kill him. Kill him. And so David was playing the lyre because he's aware that this is one of those bad days for Saul. And so Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear, but he eluded Saul so that he struck the spear into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. So David gets away again by the power of the Holy Spirit from the murderous attempt on his life by King Saul. Verse 11. Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch him, that he might kill him in the morning. So Saul doesn't just have this one little episode and then we move on. He actually sends people to surround David's house, to basically make it obvious that the next time David comes outside of that house, he's going to be grabbed. And Michal is aware of this because David is aware of this. And it's very tense. It's very, very, very much something that they both worry about. So Michal, David's wife, told him, "If you do not escape with your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." So Michal let David down through the window, and he fled away and escaped. So she works with David to get him secretly out of the house that night. Middle of the night, the door is being watched, so they work out for him to go out a window that is where it's not being watched. But she's still concerned that they might come looking for him before David can get far enough away from the city of Gibeah. She doesn't want these guys chasing him down. She loves David. Let's make very, very clear about that. And she's doing what she can to save his life from her own father. So Michal took an image. Depending on your version, you might actually have idol here. Now, why would David have an idol in his house? It's not for worship. I'm going to suggest to you two possibilities. Either number one, this Hebrew word can also simply mean statue, so that he simply had a decoration in his house. Now, the Jews of the first and century BC and the first century AD, and Josephus was kind of coming out of that time frame, they didn't believe that God allowed any type of imagery around at all, nothing. And so they believed that statues were evil. But there's indication that back in this time, decorative statues were not considered to be a breaking of the commandment because you were not using them to worship. So it's possible this is just a decorative statue. Secondary one. You know that David takes war trophies. And sometimes those war trophies might have been the idols of Philistine cities. And he might have taken one home and put it as a war trophy, a decoration, not as something to worship. So that's another possibility. But whatever the reason is, Michal took that image and she laid it on the bed because it's life size. It's the size of a person. And she put a pillow of goat's hair at its head and covered it with clothes. So it looks like the body of a man lying under the covers with his hair hanging out at the top, especially if it's in a dark room. And when Saul sent messengers to take David, she said, well, he's sick. And she might have even let them peek into the room so that they kind of saw a vague humanoid form under the covers with some hair hanging out. And so Saul sent the messengers to see David, saying, bring him up to me in the bed that I may kill him. So Saul says, I don't care if he's sick. You go back down there, grab the bed, and bring him here so that I can execute him right now because I want him dead. When the messengers came in, behold, the image was in the bed and the pillow of goat's hair at its head. So they go back to carry out Saul's command, and when they get ready to pick up the bed and take him, it's not him. It's just a statue. So they go back and report that to King Saul, who now wants to know why his daughter was involved in this. And so Saul said to Michal, why have you deceived me thus and let my enemy go so that he's escaped? And Michal answered Saul, he said to me, let me go. Why should I kill you? So she protects herself by saying, look, Dad, he would have killed me if I didn't go along with this plan and give him time. Tomorrow, we'll come back and see where David went as he escaped from Saul.